All right, ready to dive into a Supreme Court case today. This one goes all the way back to the 1960s with the Warren Trading Post Company.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. It's a classic. It really gets at the heart of.
Right on the Navajo Reservation, and they ended up in this legal battle that, well, it had a pretty huge impact on how we think about tribal sovereignty, even today.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, this case really digs into those messy relationships, between state governments, the whole concept of tribal sovereignty, and then you've got that big elephant in the room, federal power.
It is kind of like a big puzzle, isn't it? Trying to figure out, who has the authority to do what, especially when you consider that the federal government already has this whole system in place for dealing with trade, commerce involving tribes.
Exactly. All right, so picture this. It's 1965, Arizona. You've got the Warren Trading Post Company. They're operating, sustling on the Navajo Reservation. All seems pretty straightforward. But
They're
then,
operating under a federal license, right? At least that's how I remember it.
right, under a federal license. And then, boom, Arizona comes in and decides, hey, we're going to impose a 2% gross on income tax on all those sales the trading post is making to, the tribal members.
Whoa, okay, so that's a pretty direct challenge. I mean, did Warren Trading Post just accept this new tax?
Nope, not a chance. They argued that Arizona's tax was a big no-no, violating federal law, interfering with that whole federal system for regulating trade, the one we were talking about earlier.
Right. So this is where that whole concept of federal preemption comes into play. Like the idea that federal law trumps state law when they clash.
You got it. That's exactly what they argued.
So I'm guessing they didn't just go straight to the Supreme Court with this, did they?
Well, no. First, they went to the Arizona courts, tried their luck there.
Makes sense.
But no dife. The state courts actually sided with Arizona.
Oh, so they lost the first round.
They did, yeah. So Warren Trading Post, facing this setback, they decided to go big, appeal all the way up to the Supreme Court.
And that's where things get really interesting. What was the Supreme Court's take on all of this? Did they side with Arizona?
Actually, no. They overturned the Arizona court's decision, sided with Warren Trading Post, and they really hammered home the point about federal supremacy, especially when it comes to Native American affairs.
Wow, so basically told Arizona, hands off, not your jurisdiction. That's a pretty bold move. I'm guessing there had to be some strong reasoning behind that.
Oh, absolutely. The court recognized that the feds, they already had this intricate system in place, for regulating trade with the tribes. We're talking licensing rules, price controls, even stuff to prevent fraud. They essentially said letting Arizona tap in its own tax would throw a wrench in the whole system.
I see. So it's kind of about more than just one trading post and some taxes. It's like setting a precedent, right, for how we understand those boundaries between state and federal power when you're talking about tribal lands.
You're catching on quickly. You're absolutely right. And it goes even deeper than that. Think about it. Native American tribes, they have a unique status in the U.S. They're self-governing entities. It's this whole idea of tribal sovereignty.
Right. And historically, treaties and federal policies, they've been set up to try and protect these reservations from too much interference from the states.
Dingo. So Arizona trying to slap on this tax, it wasn't just about money. It was stepping on the toes of that whole idea of tribal self-governance.
Gotcha. So the court was like, hey, feds, you have a duty here to protect tribal interests, and letting a state tax mess with the economic activity on a reservation, that just undermines that protection.
Exactly. Especially, given that Arizona wasn't exactly providing all sorts of services to the reservation to justify this kind of interference.
Like they weren't in charge of law enforcement or building infrastructure out there or anything like that.
Nope, not really. So the court was kind of saying you can't just reap the benefits of taxing something if you're not contributing to its well-being.
I could see how that makes sense. It sounds like the court was saying you can't just benefit from taxing activities you're not supporting.
Exactly. That question, responsibility versus benefits, it comes up a lot in cases about tribal sovereignty. The court often looks at that when making their decisions.
Yeah, that makes sense. So beyond just the technical legal stuff, the court was also thinking about the real-world impact this tax would have on the reservation.
Absolutely. They were worried about the economic strain it would put on the Native American traders, consumers, maybe making them more vulnerable to, exploitation.
That's a good point.
And they even brought up those historical treaties, how they were designed to give tribes space to govern themselves without too much meddling from the outside.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack here. So it sounds like the court really dug deep into the historical and economic context to get the full picture.
You know it. And to truly appreciate the weight of their decision, let's take a look at Justice Black's words. He wrote the majority opinion, and he stated, and I quote, Congress has taken the business of Indian trading so fully in hand, no state burdens are permissible.
Yeah, that's a pretty clear message.
It really is. It shows how strongly they believe that the federal government's role in regulating Indian trade was so intentional, so complete, that states just didn't have the right to step in and impose burdens like taxes.
It's interesting how they got to this conclusion, right? Not because there was some law specifically saying no state taxes on tribal lands, but because they recognized the whole point of federal involvement.
Absolutely. And that brings us to what's called implied preemption. The court decided that the whole federal system around Indian trade was so thorough that it inherently blocked states from interfering.
Okay, so it wasn't just about the letter of the law, but more like the spirit of it.
Bingo. They read between the lines and saw the big picture of federal regulations as a signal. States, stay out. Now, to be fair, Arizona did have its own arguments. They believed they had the right to tax businesses within their state lines, even those in tribal land.
Oh, interesting. I could see how they might think that, but I guess the Supreme Court didn't really agree.
Not really, no. They pointed out that Arizona wasn't exactly providing services to the Navajo Reservation, so why should they have the power to tax economic activity there? It wouldn't be fair.
It makes you wonder what would happen if Arizona had been providing those services, right?
That's a good question. It really gets at that balance of power we've been talking about.
So the Warren Trading Post case wasn't just a squabble about taxes. It really solidified federal power in tribal matters and how important it is to respect tribal sovereignty.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And this case's legacy, it's huge. It set a precedent that echoed through legal battles over tribal rights for years and even today.
This is all super interesting, but before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I want to know more about what happened next, right after the Supreme Court made this decision.
Welcome back. Glad to have you with us as we continue to unpack Warren Trading Post v. Arizona Tax Commission.
Yeah, we've definitely laid the groundwork, you know, the historical context and all those legal arguments behind this decision. Now I'm curious to see how a case from over 50 years ago still has relevance today.
Great question, actually. It all boils down to the principles that Warren Trading Post really solidified, you know, federal law taking precedence in tribal affairs, respecting tribal sovereignty, and understanding that states can't just impose burdens on tribal economies without taking into account what's already in place federally.
So it's almost like this legal shield protecting tribal interests from states overstepping.
That's a great way to put it. And this shield, it's still very much in play today, especially with all the new challenges that tribal sovereignty faces.
Like what kind of challenges? Can you give me some concrete examples?
Sure. Think about the cannabis industry. It's booming, right? In states where it's legal, recreationally or medicinally, there are all these debates about whether states have the power to tax cannabis sales on tribal lands.
Oh, wow. So something from 1965 could actually have implications for something as current as cannabis.
Absolutely. Tribes who are cultivating and selling on their reservations often argue that state taxation infringes on their sovereignty and messes up the systems they've established, you know, often in line with federal guidelines.
Wow, it's amazing how these old legal battles can still resonate so strongly in modern contexts.
It shows how precedent works. Its reach is far and wide. And it's not just cannabis either. Similar debates pop up around energy projects on tribal lands, like those oil pipelines or wind farms.
So states might want to impose taxes or fees on these projects.
Yeah, but the tribes often push back, and they cite, guess what, Warren Trading Post as part of their argument that they have the right to control economic activity on their own lands.
So it's not just about preserving traditional ways of life, it's about giving tribes the ability to participate in new industries on their own terms.
You got it. It's all about self-determination, and Warren Trading Post provides the legal foundation for that argument. Of course, this is where things can get a little heated. States say they need that revenue to fund their services.
Yeah, I could see how both sides would have strong arguments.
But tribes often counter that they're the ones bearing the brunt of the environmental or social costs of these projects without getting the full economic benefits.
I see. So it's like a balancing act, right? Respecting tribal sovereignty while also acknowledging the needs of the states.
Absolutely. Warren Trading Post is this constant reminder that these questions, they're rooted in history, in legal precedent, and they reflect how the relationship between tribal nations and the U.S. government is always evolving.
So we've established how relevant this case still is today, but for our listeners who might not be legal experts, let's break down one of the legal concepts. Remind us what federal preemption is and why it's so important in this case.
All right, so federal preemption basically means that when you've got a clash between federal and state law, federal law always wins. It's like a hierarchy, right? Federal law is at the top.
Like a trump card in the legal system.
Exactly. Now, there are different kinds of preemption, but the one in Warren Trading Post is what we call implied preemption.
Okay, that's where it gets a little tricky, right? Can you walk us through what implied preemption means?
Sure. So in this case, Congress didn't specifically pass a law that said states no taxing businesses on tribal lands.
They didn't.
Nope, not explicitly. But the court looked at all those federal laws related to Indian trade and said, look, this system is so detailed, so thorough, it implies that Congress never intended for states to step in.
So you're saying it's not about finding one specific law, but about understanding the bigger picture, what the laws imply?
That's exactly it. The court basically inferred Congress's intent from the overall structure of the regulations.
Now, wouldn't that give the federal government a lot of power? Couldn't they basically shut down anything states do by just claiming implied preemption?
That's a good point, and a worry that comes up often. The key, like with most things, is balance. We need to acknowledge the state's right to regulate things within their borders, while also understanding that federal law is supreme when we're talking about tribal sovereignty.
Sounds like a tough balancing act.
It is. Warren Tradohost is a perfect example of how courts have to sort through this complex interplay of powers. In this particular case, they decided the federal government had basically created a what we call an occupied field when it came to trade with tribes, leaving no room for states to get involved.
That's a great way to explain it. I can see how they drew those lines between federal and state authority.
You got it. And this concept of implied preemption isn't limited to tribal issues either. It shows up in all sorts of areas: environment, healthcare, immigration, lots of places where federal and state laws might clash.
So understanding implied preemption is basically a key to understanding how federalism works in the U.S.
Absolutely. It's super important for that.
All right, we've talked about the case's history, the reasoning behind the decision, and this idea of implied preemption. We've also seen how a case from 1965 is still shaping how we think about tribal sovereignty today. What else should we consider as we keep grappling with these complicated issues? And we're back, wrapping up our deep dive into Warren Trading Post-Fee Arizona Tax Commission.
We've been on quite a journey, haven't we? From the specifics of the case to those broader questions about tribal sovereignty.
We sure have. So as we get ready to sign off, what are your main takeaways from all this? What really sticks out to you about this case?
You know, for me, it's the sheer impact of the Supreme Court stepping in. They didn't just rule on a tax, right? They really made a point about how vital federal law is in protecting tribal sovereignty.
Yeah, and those ripples are still being felt today. It seems like every time a state tries to flex its muscles on tribal lands, the ghost of Warren Trading Post is there.
Exactly. It's a landmark case, a constant reference point whenever we're trying to make sense of that relationship between states, the feds, and tribal sovereignty.
It also shows just how important the courts are in safeguarding tribal rights, making sure states don't overstep.
Absolutely.
And I keep coming back to that idea of implied preemption. The court didn't need a specific law to strike down that state tax. They just looked at the whole web of federal regulations around Indian trade and said, nope, states, you can't mess with this.
It's a good reminder that the law isn't always cut and dry. Sometimes you have to really dig into the history, the context, to get at what those laws really mean.
It's like we're legal detectives trying to put all the pieces together.
That's a great analogy.
So we've talked about the lasting impact of this case, implied preemption, and its relevance even today. But as we face new challenges in tribal-state relations, what lessons do you think we can learn from Warren Trading Post?
That's the big question, isn't it? One thing that jumps out at me is that we need better communication, more collaboration between tribes and states.
So maybe not always rushing to court to settle things?
Yeah, sometimes you can't avoid it, but I think there's a growing recognition that lots of issues could be solved by just talking, negotiating, finding solutions that work for everyone.
That makes sense. After all, tribes and states often share common goals, like boosting the economy, protecting the environment, keeping people safe.
Right, and working together instead of fighting is more likely to get us to those goals.
So it's about building bridges, not walls.
Exactly, but that takes listening to each other, trying to see things from different perspectives, finding common ground.
And I think Warren Trading Post, even though it was a win for tribes, reminds us that this relationship between tribes and states can be really complex and full of tension.
You're right. It was a product of its time, and we still see how that history of injustice, of power imbalances, is shaping things today.
So it's about more than just the legal stuff. It's about understanding the history and what tribal communities have experienced.
Exactly. We need empathy, sensitivity, and a real commitment to making things right.
Well, we've covered a lot in this deep dive. We've gone from that trading post on the Navajo Reservation to the Supreme Court and all the way to the issues facing tribal nations today.
It's amazing how one case can have so much historical, legal, and social weight, isn't it?
It really is. It gives us all a lot to think about.
Sure.
As we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought to chew on.
Go for it.
Does Warren Trading Post strike the right balance between state and federal power when we're talking about tribal sovereignty? And how can we make sure future decisions, laws, policies, all of it, keep protecting the rights of Native American tribes?
Those are great questions, and they remind us that we still have work to do to ensure justice and reconciliation for Native American tribes.
Thank you for joining us today for this deep dive into Warren Trading Post v. Arizona Tax Commission. We'll catch you next time.